So how did you meet the love of your life? Did you find the secret to lifelong romance, to eternal love? Have you lost the love of your life? We will share love stories this hour in honor of Valentine's Day with Dave Isay, who is author of All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, February the 13th. We will also hear some clips from some powerful StoryCorps recordings about love this hour, and we hope that you will share your love story too at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps. His latest book is All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. StoryCorps is a nonprofit oral history project which is affiliated with public radio. It involves people recording interviews with other people, often a loved one, and some of the stories are broadcast on National Public Radio. And Dave Isay joins us by ISDN from WNYC in New York City. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. It's great to be back.
Yes, it's great to have you here. Well, I spent my morning when I was listening to these excerpts blubbering away and crying. Some of them are very, very happy stories that make you cry, and some of them are sad stories because they're stories about people who have lost their loves, too.
Yeah, you know, I think we may have talked about this before, but, you know, it's funny, the whole StoryCorps making you cry thing seems to be hitting some kind of a crescendo over the last couple of weeks. I got an email from my brother forwarded it to me on Friday from a friend of his who wrote that she was, after she heard StoryCorps, she was doubled over in the bathroom crying, and her husband walked by, peeked in, and just said StoryCorps and walked right by. So, but, you know, I don't think, you know, most of these stories aren't sad, you know, and I think what's happening is that, you know, these are people being real with each other. It's everyday people communicating with each other in a very authentic way. We're hearing life oftentimes lived kind of to its fullest. And when you hear those sorts of stories, which is so different than what you'd hear on, you know, commercial broadcasting or reading the papers with all the kind of celebrity nonsense and the political craziness, that they, you know, to me, these stories are kind of like poems, you know, and when you hear these lives lived to their fullest, you're kind of walking on holy ground. And I think that's why people get emotional when they hear these things.
Well, before we start hearing some of them, I did want to ask you about the title of the book and the dedication of the book. Lily May Love. Tell us about Lily May.
Sure. Lily Love was a facilitator, and, you know, we've talked about StoryCorps many times together, but just to remind people, we've done 40,000 interviews through StoryCorps with about 80,000 people, because most people come in pairs, and the way it works is you come to the booth with a loved one, and whether it's a mobile booth that travels the country or one of our permanent booths, and you go inside and you sit across from your loved one and have this 40-minute conversation. The person who's helping you through that conversation is called a facilitator, and they talk about this job as bearing witness. And there are these people who are hired because they're wonderful listeners. We've had several hundred of them. They're amazing human beings, and one of those amazing human beings was a woman named Lily Love, who was a facilitator in Atlanta. And she died suddenly in 2010 something. She died in 2010, totally unexpectedly, and we dedicated this book to her. And the title comes from an interview, a story. Everybody, of course, who facilitates for StoryCorps, they do at the very least an interview when they start and an interview when they leave. And this was from her beginning interview, and she said, "Love is all there is. When you take your last breath, you remember the people you love, how much love you inspired, and how much love you gave." And I also, you know, I brought with me, if you'd let me, a letter that we got the day that that Lily passed away from one of the participants in Atlanta, which I think also speaks to how StoryCorps kind of raises the bar on eloquence in people.
Yes, please share.
So this is from a woman named Renee Winchester, and I have this with me because I was in Atlanta just a night ago and got to meet Lily's family. It says, It's rare in this hurried world to encounter someone who instantly makes you feel significant. Lily Love was that kind of person. The more she heard about you, the more she loved you. Now I'm a hugger, she warned at the end of the interview. My rule is that if you record, you're going to get a hug. Oh, what a hug it was. A soul squeezer. Lily Love was a minister of hugs, a purveyor of joy. She was God's designated hugger. She made me want to be just like her. On that day, love was shared. On that day, we mattered to each other. We embraced and became a blending of age, race, and experiences. And today, as I learn of Miss Love's passing, I weep for those who will never know her love, yet celebrate a beautiful life that made everyone she met matter. I suspect there's a whole lot of hugging going on in heaven right now. Mm. Big, big hugs to you, Miss Lily Love. Yeah. So her spirit helps, and the spirit of so many others who've been a part of StoryCorps helps kind of drive this project forward. Well,
and she was so right with love is all there is. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two... the two lessons that the book is just out and, you know, you write a book and then you take a year for it to kind of go through the process. And then it came out 2 weeks ago and I read it. It actually came out a week ago. And there are two things that I take from it when I read the whole book. And these are the 40 kind of most remarkable stories of the 40,000 interviews we've recorded having to do with romantic love. One is that no one should ever give up hope because over and over again in these stories, love kind of sneaks up behind people when they least expect it. In fact, the whole last section is called Found at Last, which is about people who didn't expect to find love. And it kind of taps you on the shoulder. And the other is that love is everything and worth any sacrifice. Because when everything else has melted away and turned to dust, all that endures is love.
We are talking with Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps, and the author of his latest book, All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. We will share some of the love stories, and we hope that you will share yours too. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Dave, I wanted to start with a story that... it has something to do with how somebody first met. I played the song "First Time Ever I Saw Your Face" to start the segment, but this one was a sweet story about someone who met their spouse on an elevator, I believe.
One day waiting in the lobby for the elevator. The door slid aside, and there she stood. The prettiest girl I had ever seen. She was the operator. There were three or four other people on the elevator, and I was the last one on floor number 10. And she opened the door, and I said, "Thank you." And she said, "You're welcome." That was the total conversation, that first contact. Of course, in the next few days, I saw her, but I was so backward and bashful that I didn't say anything to her except 10. She said, "Yes, I know." Thank goodness she broke the ice. She said, "Do you know where you can get some good chop suey? How about that for an opening?" I said, "Sure. The cafe across the street is a Chinese cafe. They serve chop suey."
I sensed that she set that up.
I realized later she did. When I said I eat there every day, she said, "Oh." I realized I had an opening. And we had chop suey, and we got acquainted. We got married right there in my mother's living room, and we had a 63-year honeymoon. And as you often say to me, when we part company, you say, "Life is good." And I have to think, yeah, life is good, even though I lost my sweetheart.
Oh, I lied. That was a tearjerker. But it was still sweet to hear about how they met in the chop suey and all that. Tell us about Paul Wilson.
Sure. That's a story that is very much kind of a very wonderful standard StoryCorps story. Paul Wilson was 93 when he recorded it, and he went to the booth with his daughter, Marty Smith, who he met her mom in the 1940s in Wichita, Kansas. And this interview was also recorded in Wichita, Kansas. He says at the end of the interview, he talks about losing his wife, and he said, "Every day is a memorial for her." And that, you know, and again, with when you listen to the voice, you know, and the words, you know, it's that poetry of it's the poetry and the words and the voice of everyday people when we take the time to listen.
Yeah. Well, maybe you'll do a better job picking a non-tearjerker.
Okay. You want to try, you want me to, do another piece?
Yeah.
So why don't we do, do you have Honey and Elliot Ryken?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so that's definitely not a
tear. All right, all right, let's set it up for us.
Sure. This is a pair who came to the booth who have been married for more than 60 years, and this is from the found section of StoryCorps, and you're going to have to kind of listen. The Brooklyn accents aren't that thick. I think people will be able to understand. Honey and Elliot. Honey was. Is an identical twin. She has a sister named Bunny, and Elliot is an identical twin. He has an identical. He has a brother named Danny. And in the 1940s, they were both working at the same hotel in the Catskill, so both pairs of twins. And Honey and Elliot fell in love, and Danny and Bunny fell in love, and the two the twins got married. And Honey and Elliot came in to tell their story.
And it was two brides, two grooms. One set of parents for each. The gowns were identical gowns. The flowers were identical.
We both went on our honeymoon to Miami Beach by different trains.
Yeah, so people
wouldn't.
Because
it wouldn't be so obvious that people would be staring at us. You know,
yeah, the twins that married the twins.
What did you think about marrying me many years ago?
You bowled me over with your way of kissing and the way you hold me when we dance. You're not a fantastic dancer, but you hold me fantastically, and I feel it. It's genuine. You're just not phony. I don't think you have a phony bone in your body. And I never thought anybody lasts this many years.
Like just yesterday, it was our 50th anniversary.
Yeah, now it's 11 years after that.
Yeah.
I never feel, what will he do if I die first? You know how to open tuna fish. You know how to smear it with mayonnaise. You will not fall apart. You'll feel sad when I'm gone, but you'll manage, and that makes me feel very good. Thank you for being you, Elliot. You made my life complete.
And I say the same. You made my life complete, and hope we go on for another 50 years.
I'll take five good ones. Five good ones. And I'll say, thank you, God.
Oh, I'm still crying. I'm sorry. It was very, very sweet. Very, very sweet. But isn't that was darling.
Well, it's like with those two, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. You can't,
yeah.
You can't go wrong.
Well, so if someone wants to record a story or maybe a love story in honor of Valentine's Day, what do they do and how can they share it with StoryCorps?
Well, you know, we have, if you go to our website, storycorps.org, it will let you know where our booths are right now. I don't think that we have one in Wisconsin at the moment. But, you know, the booths come through. And but it's the most important thing is to have these conversations. If you know, iPhones have a really good recording device on them. You can get, we've talked about this before, five friends together, everyone put in, you know, $10 and you can get a $50 digital recorder, which is really, really good. On our website, there's instructions on how to do these StoryCorps interviews yourself. We can't, unfortunately, accept those for the Library of Congress because there are very high standards with audio and the data that needs to be collected. But you can, you know, have these conversations and with a little bit of care, you can keep them for a very, very long time to come. So I would definitely suggest that people have these conversations, that people do this kind of StoryCorps process. But I think at its core, one of the important things to take from StoryCorps is taking the time to say the things to people who matter to you that you know you should say you want to say. There's many stories in this book. The whole middle section are various stories of loss, and you know it's. You know, part of the lesson of StoryCorps, I think, is just remembering how fragile, you know, life is, and that you do want to take the time to say to the people in your life how much they mean to you, how much you care about them, how much you love them today. So even if you do just that on Valentine's Day, that would be very much in the spirit of StoryCorps.
We are talking with Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps. His latest book is All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. Stories of how people met the love of their life, how people lost the love of their life. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, and your love story, too. Tell us your love story at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Where do I begin to tell the story of how great a love can be? The sweet love story that is older than the sea.
Well, we are sharing love stories this hour with Dave Isay, author of All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. 1-800-642-1234. If you would like to share an aspect of your love story, how did you meet your love? How did you know that your love was the one? Did you find the secret to a lifelong romance? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, we have Dave in Oregon with us. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Great to talk to you.
Well,
great,
thanks for calling
today. You bet. Well, back in 1988, end of 88, early 89, I was single, living in the Milwaukee area, and I was just really looking for a serious relationship and really kind of set that goal to meet someone. And it wasn't happening, and happened to be going through the checkout line at the grocery store and noticed Single Life magazine on the rack as I was checking out. Decided to pick it up, took it home to my apartment, started looking through it, and just kind of started mulling it over for a couple months. Didn't really reply until I sent out a few responses to a few of the ads in there, and anyway, time went by, and I finally sent out this batch of about 8 responses to ads that looked attractive, and come to find out that the one I got hooked up with, her name is Becky, she ended up getting a bunch of responses initially, and then her boyfriend found out and got a hold of them and threw them away, but my response hadn't shown up yet. Sent it out the end of November that year in 88, and she got it probably in December, early December, and opened it up and finally called me right into early 89, and we talked on the phone for about an hour and really sounded interesting, so we set up a blind date, and it was pretty exciting because I'd won a sales contest where I was working, so I was able to take her to the Hyatt in Milwaukee and met her there, and just a beautiful young lady.
Dave, it sounds like that you lived happily ever after. Am I right?
Yeah, we got engaged within 7 months and then got married by end of December of 89. So we knew each other less than a year, and we've been married over 22 years now.
Wow. Well, congratulations. That's, you know, but what's interesting to me when Dave Isay, when Dave, our caller, first started his story and said that he was going through the checkout line at the supermarket, I thought for sure he was going to say that he met the love of his life in, you know, as the cashier, but it was an online ad. So the same times have changed.
But, you know, but we knew that it wasn't online. It was actually in a magazine.
Oh, that's true. Yes, not online.
But I knew that it would be some kind of a serendipity story because so many of these stories are.
Right, right, and that's true. I guess I was thinking it wasn't an online ad, but that is the way a lot of people are meeting these days is online.
And we have some online. We have a story in this book of a couple who I actually met yesterday on tour, and he was in Waco, Texas, and she was in the Philippines, and her coworker had accidentally, they had the same name, initials and last name, and a coworker accidentally sent an email to him meant for her, and they met over email and eventually got married, and she now lives in Waco, Texas.
I want to thank Dave from Oregon for sharing his love story, and congratulations, Dave. And I want to also share a story of how two people met. Let's just take a listen.
I was a toll collector for about 17 years.
I would drive the thruway pretty regularly, and I saw you one day, and you were very friendly, and desperately cute. And we would chat every now and then. And I came through one day, you were counting money, and I said, "How you doing?" And then you look up and said, "Where you been?" And I said, "I've been here. Where have you been?" You said, "Well, you must have been coming through the wrong lane." And you said, "Well, I'll put a cone in my lane. It'll be like keeping a candle in the window for you." So I started making excuses to take the thruway and started looking for the orange pylons, almost wrecked on several occasions, I'm sure, trying to cross several lanes. And I went through one day and I said, "Hey, what do I get if you forget to put the cone up?" And you said, "Well, you name it." And I said, "Will you take me to dinner?" And gave me my phone number. Drove through and thought I was a total ding-a-ling for giving the thruway guy my phone number. But any friend that has ever seen us together never wondered. They always said, "Oh, yeah, of course, Sonia and Mike. I mean, what they have together is obvious."
I agree.
That was sweet. Meeting in the toll lane. Tell us about that couple.
Well, every one of these stories has something that that's really memorable. And the thing that I remember from that piece, and I actually haven't heard. I think I've only heard that audio once before, and that was when we broadcast it. How putting the cone out was like keeping a light in the window for her, which is just such a great image. And they're still together. I know they were. I think that story happened somewhere on the East Coast, but I know they live now in Kentucky and recorded the story down in Kentucky.
We'll take another call from Damon in Hudson now. Hello, Damon. Do you have a love story to share?
Yeah, I sure do. I sure do. Just wanted to share, about 20 years ago when I was in high school, my high school sweetheart and I, we were actually engaged to be married, and we went off to separate colleges and lost connection with each other. Things just didn't work out. We were too young at the time. We each got married to separate people. We each had three children, and about 15 years later, around the same time, we both found ourselves going through a divorce with our exes. We had lost contact with each other literally for 15 years, didn't know where she was, she didn't know where I was, we never talked to each other, heard from each other. And one day, after I had gone through my divorce, I had a dream. And in my dream, I just had this vision of a girl who I knew when I woke up was literally my dream girl. I knew I was dreaming about my soulmate. And this dream just haunted me for a few days until I realized I knew exactly who I was dreaming about, and I was dreaming about my high school sweetheart. Contacted her through Facebook or MySpace or something like that, and we reconnected, and it was fate. It was meant to be. We've been together ever since for the past 5 years. We're married now, and we've blended our families, so we've got six children all together. I mean, we're the Brady Bunch, and it was just something that we knew that was going to happen. The minute we reconnected, we there was never a "will you marry me?" It was just, we know we're going to get married. Yeah. And we've been absolutely ecstatic ever since.
How wonderful. Have a reaction, Dave?
That's a very familiar story. It makes me think of, I heard a story about a couple who, this was at the very early days of StoryCorps. And I'm not sure I'm going to get this exactly right, but they had known each other in kindergarten. And they lived in the Pacific Northwest. At least the woman did. They and the man lived in New York. And she, as an adult, started having dreams about this kid who she knew from elementary school. And she came to New York and had them meet at the StoryCorps booth for the first time since they had seen each other in elementary school, and told him about these dreams. And then they got married and played their StoryCorps story, of course, at the wedding. That's not in the book, but there are many, many stories like that. There was a story we aired a couple weeks ago on NPR, which is actually in the book. And I remember sitting in a lobby of a hotel somewhere, just like turning the pages on this thing and not believing it. And it's this 40-year story of a couple, a guy who fell in love with this woman. He was 16, she was 15, at a skating rink on an army base in Maryland, and basically pursued her for the next 40 years through continents and wars, and finally, 40 years later, this relationship that was meant to be, that it happened. She tells the story of picking up the phone. She finally left her husband. Soon after they met, just to give an example, her father was stationed in Japan, and he joined the Marines and said, "Put me in Japan." And they said, "We'll put you where we want to put you." And basically, they just kept missing each other over all these years. Finally, after 40 years, she picked up the phone and called him, and she said, "Do you know who this is?" And he said, "I know exactly who it is." And she said, "Are you mad at me?" And he said, "No, I'm still in love with you." And and that was it.
Wonderful. So, Damon, are you still with us?
Yeah, I am.
So how did you know, how did your wife know that you were soulmates? You said, "Well, I just knew it was her."
It was just a feeling. It was just a feeling that I had. In this dream that I had of her, I just knew that this was my dream girl. Everything about this dream just spoke to me, and it was the sort of thing that I just had this gut feeling. And when we reconnected, she did too. You know, everything that we were missing in our previous marriages was right in front of us with each other, and we didn't we didn't understand that until we had gotten back together and we just talked about it, and it was so obvious to us that everything that we wanted out of life, it was our desires that we wanted out of a relationship were based on what we had together when we were back in high school and when we knew each other years ago. So when we reconnected, it was just, it was simple. We just knew it right away.
Well, congratulations. We're very happy for you. Thanks for calling.
Love the story, Courtney.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Appreciate you letting me share my story.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And let's go to Marty.
And I do want to, coming off that story, I do want to say that, there are people in their 60s, 70s, 80s in this book where it takes that long until you can find that person. I think StoryCorps as a whole is a project in many ways about hope. When you hear these stories, we're hearing, what I think is the real American story. We're hearing people at their best, that it's a very different story than you'd get from if you tried to understand who America was by watching the 24-hour news channels and reading the tabloids. This kind of love will sneak up on people, at least in the interviews we've done, at any point. And you never, ever want to give up hope that this will happen.
Mm-hmm. Marty in Palmyra is with us. Hello, Marty.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My love story, I was at a party a couple decades ago with my date, and this woman came in with her date, and through the course of the evening, I, got next to her, chatted with her, and I kind of said, what are you doing with this guy? She's just too good looking, And so that was that, we're just friends, blah, blah, blah. Well, a few years later, I put my business card into a fishbowl in a bar, and I won a night with 20 people and drinks and food and whatnot. Well, I called some of my buddies, and they brought her with. I guess she was enamored with me or fell in love with me right there and then. And as she was supposed to give her answer to a Florida suitor that night or the next morning as to whether or not she'd marry him. And she said, afterwards, she goes, if I felt like this for this guy, she goes, how can I marry this guy? Well, I needed to be beat over the head with a log, to realize that she was interested in me. She used to have, backyard parties after the weekend, everybody sit around and read the paper and have a mojito or whatever. And I'm walking in one with my friend, and he's in front of me, and she's laying on a chaise lounge, and she turns around and looks at me with this big gleaming smile. I actually turned around to see who was behind me. I couldn't believe that was, that was me, So, her brother had a boat up in Wisconsin, so all right, me and some of my buddies and her, we're going to go up there and, do some water skiing in his boat. Well, of course, all the other buddies back out, unbeknownst to me that she was maneuvering this way, and ended up just being her and I. Long story short, we were engaged 6 months later. I could start a sentence. She can finish it. It's just so infatuated with her. It was just.
Yeah,
and what a force!
And you're married now, Marty?
Oh yeah, I'm still married with her, and I was doing roofing at the time, and we had gotten married, and we're pregnant, we had our first child 9 months later, after we got married, and I remember I laughed to myself. I'm up on the roof banging. I'm like, the wife, the house, the kids, the car. The wife, the house, the kids, the car.
Well, I think that do most guys need to be beat over the head, Dave, I say, or does that go both ways?
I don't know, but I have to say that I did an interview. The last hour-long interview with Calls I did was on Friday. Today's Monday. I've been on the road, so I get a little confused. I think today's Monday. I did it on Friday. And I walked out of that interview. I think it was in Oregon. And every single call was from a man. And we're repeating that today. And I don't know exactly what's going on because many StoryCorps calls are from women. But there is some strange phenomena going on here. So there, I think that there is this, I guess men love to tell story, love to tell love stories as much or more than women.
I think it's great. And Marty, that was a great love story. And congratulations to you, too. We do have a woman who wants to share a story.
I knew that was going to happen.
Yes, here
That'll
we go.
That'll be the last man call that we have.
Kate in Milwaukee. Thank you for calling, Kate. We're looking forward to your love story.
Morning.
When
I was a child, my brother had an off and on friend who was 4 years older than I was, and we would play. And he moved away. Or I never saw him again. And when I was going to be 16, I was walking down the street with a girlfriend, and this older man came walking towards us, and I was like, oh, my gosh, that guy's so cute. I'm like, that's the man I'm going to marry. And my friend was laughing really hard. Well, my 16th birthday came, and my sister-in-law said, I have a friend who has this brother that's just really good looking. I'm going to have him come over and help me put up a swing set for my kids. Come and look at this guy. And I said, well, what's his name? And she said, Marty. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I know that guy. So we went and we met, and it was like love at first sight. But, you know, I'm 16, so you don't know if that's infatuation. He was 20. We hung out for a couple of days, and he said, I have to go back up north. I've got work up there, and I don't have work down here. And so we parted, and he left, and I didn't think anything more of it. About 4 or 5 days later, he shows up at my door. I'm like, what are you doing here? He said, I couldn't stand it. I had to come back down here and talk to you again and see you again. I'd really like to start dating. Well, my parents weren't too thrilled about that, you know, 16 years old. In fact, they weren't so thrilled that my dad put up what they used to call a peace bond on the property. This was in the early 70s. And that meant he couldn't set foot on our property or he'd be arrested.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So, in essence, a restraining order of some sort.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it was before that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he had done that because he was afraid this older man was going to get me pregnant. And but there was nothing to have gotten pregnant then. You know, it wasn't like that. But we snuck around behind my parents' back for, I don't know, almost a good year, and my mother found out, and she talked to my dad, and she said, you know, you have to stop. You have to stop this thing. You have to meet the young man. You have to let him date her, or we're going to lose her. She might run away with him. So he let us. We could date once a month. And we would go out on dates, and then we would sneak behind their backs during that time. Well, when I was turning 19, we got married, and we've been together ever since. We'll have our 36th anniversary this spring. We have two great daughters. Right now, he's working in Texas, where we've lived the last 9 years, and I'm in Milwaukee in our last home, we hope. We've had several. We rehabbed homes with our children.
They said it wouldn't last, huh, Kate?
No, in fact, even today they say that statistics show that really young love just doesn't make it. And I just think there are those people that it is a deep spiritual connection to them. And he's down there in Texas and I'm up here, and we see each other every couple of months because he's trying to finish work and sell the house down there. And the last time he came for a visit, I said, I just worry. What happens? What happens if you die? Or I die first. What happens? And he goes, he's just looking at me. And I said, I just worry. You know, I won't see you. I won't be with you again. And he said, honey, you know I'd find you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you would.
Kate, thank you very much for sharing that story, too. Another, well, young love, love at first sight. Any stories along those lines, Dave?
Many, many stories are along those lines. You know, the last you know, as she was speaking, I was looking through the book and kept finding stories that I wanted to read to you. But, you know, from her last line, you know, there's a wonderful story of an 85-year-old man named Leroy Morgan, who remembers taking his wife to Philadelphia after he got back from World War II, his young wife, and they saw a roadside sign that said successful marriage with six things to always say to your loved one. You look great. Can I help? Let's eat out. I was wrong. I'm sorry. And I love you. And he said those six rules guided their marriage for 53 years, 2 months and 5 days. And he ends he ends the story saying how his wife passed away. But, you know, when he dies, he's just going to run all over heaven looking for her and then get down on his knee and ask her if she'd marry him again.
Aw, and he'll find her. We are talking with Dave Isay. He is founder of StoryCorps, and his latest book is All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. And we're welcoming your love story. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Were you a love at first sight person? How did you meet your loved one? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Or how did you know your loved one was the one? I'm Joy Curdine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Curdine. And just in time for Valentine's Day tomorrow, we are sharing some love stories during this hour with the author of All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps, Dave Isay. We're also hearing some excerpts from these StoryCorps love stories, stories about how love is found, how love is lost, how love is all there is. And we are welcoming your love story, too. We'll get to more of your calls in just a moment. But, Dave Isay, I wanted to share a couple more of the StoryCorps recordings. Let's tell us about the same-sex couple, Bobby and Sandy.
This is a couple who met, in the book they talk about meeting, when Bob Hope was singing overseas. They were both in the service together and, fell in love and originally, got married in a motel room on leave, in Atlanta, over a Bible in the motel room. And then eventually, were able to actually get married many, many, many decades later.
Do you remember what it was like when we moved to Ohio?
Ohio, yes, I remember Ohio. I remember second day that we were there, your mother came by and said she wanted to talk to me. She told me that it was a small town, that your father was a prominent doctor, and that she would give us 3 days to get out of town so that we wouldn't disgrace your father, his practice, your extended family. So, yeah, I remember Ohio.
Well, they then sent me to a psychiatrist to see if they could fix me. That obviously didn't work since we're still together.
We had been together for 33 years when we finally, for the first time, got to stand up in front of our friends and family and tell them that we loved each other and that we cared for each other and that we were going to take care of each other for the rest of our lives. And I remember your mom deciding that her daughter should have the right to marry.
My mom had been diagnosed with a brain hemorrhage. And she actually wanted to walk us down the aisle before she died. And this is the same woman that gave us 3 days to get out of town.
Yes, same woman.
Wow, that's quite the story. That mom was, ahead of her time, though, if she did this so many years ago.
Well, there's another story in the book of a beautiful story. It's an African American man named David Wilson, who this is in the section Found at Last, who is gay and he's in Boston and lives in a white suburb with his partner, and that partner ends up at one day when David's driving in, his partner's raking leaves on the front lawn and he collapses with a heart attack, and David goes to try and take care of him. The police and ambulance arrive, And, of course, they see an African-American man in this white neighborhood and they try and arrest him over this dying person. But eventually, and he wasn't able to be with him as he died in the hospital, but eventually he meets someone else at a support group when he thought he would never find love again. And they became the lead plaintiffs in the lawsuit that would eventually lead to gay marriage in Massachusetts. And he remembers his 85-year-old father, who was very kind of – it was hard for him to think of his son as being, you know, an out African-American man and getting married. But he came around and he tells the story of his father, who really came around, getting in a limousine for the first time. He sent a limo so that he could be at their wedding, and then sitting in the front row – pumping his arms in the air, this 85-year-old man, as his son walked down the aisle with his partner.
Our next caller is Kay in... I'm not sure where that's from. Merrill? Are you from Merrill, Kay?
Maryland. Yeah.
Okay.
When I was little, my mom worked outside the house, and I was, you know, we didn't have a father. So babysitter next door... she had a family in Milwaukee, her grandchildren were in Milwaukee, and they would come up to visit and play, and I've got pictures of me playing with the kids when we were 4 years old. Well, then when I got my first car when I was 16, they brought the car up for me, and all of a sudden this kid that I've known all my life was really cute. So we ended up getting married when we were 19, and we have now been married for 35 years.
And I'm sorry, you met when you were how old?
When I was 4 years old, she was my babysitter.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, actually, when I was born, she was my babysitter.
Thank you very much, Kay, for sharing that story. So that's
belong together.
I'm sorry?
I guess we really belong together.
I guess so. All right. Thank you very much. I wanted to play another story from Wisconsin. A couple who are from La Crosse. This is not in the book, Dave, but it is in the book.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
It sure is.
All right. Why don't you set it up then?
Sure. I've actually only heard this one once. I know the book very well. But this is Kelly and Michael. And I believe that actually Michael works at the public radio station. I didn't know this until 2 weeks ago when the book was coming out. They met at a bar that Kelly frequented and fell in love. Again, I that's the best I can do, but I think it should speak for itself.
Okay.
We got along. Your parents loved me.
The first time I brought you to dinner, my mother said...
No, your dad said, I like this one, son.
You can at least read.
Yep, she can at least read. And your sister said...
I've never seen you so complacent.
Yep.
My brother jumps in and says, how good is she in bed? But that's my brother.
And it was actually your mother who proposed.
That's true.
She knew the priorities.
Yeah, and I didn't. I had no clue.
And you frequently look at me and say, why do you stay married to me? And I've never been able to come up with a good answer for that. I mean, this is still going strong because we're enjoying it.
I would say that's the best part. Yeah, you make me laugh. That's the best part about being married to you.
The sense of humor is very important, Dave, I say, don't you think?
It is.
Yeah.
I'd love to read. Can I read a story from the book about someone who, where it wasn't love at first sight?
Sure.
Okay, great. I just came across this as I was listening to that story and thought I might read it. I hope I do it justice. This is a woman named Gran Kestenbaum. And she's actually part of our 9/11 project. Every family who lost a loved one on 9/11 comes to StoryCorps. And there are many love stories in those interviews. And this is Gran remembering Howard. She said, Howard and I met on Friday the 13th, 1969. He fell on me at a party, and I thought he was the goofiest guy I'd ever met in my life. He was a student at Columbia working on a PhD in astrophysics, but I didn't believe him. He said he was 25. He didn't look 25. He had a shirt that was so rumpled, and he had these old stovepipe jeans on and a pair of shoes, one of which had many, 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 many rubber bands wrapped around it because the sole was coming apart. When I was going to leave the party, he said, I'll walk you home. And I thought, what did I do to deserve this? I don't want you to walk me home. And so he walked my friend and I home. I lived at the time in a girl's residence on West 11th Street in the Village in New York. And my friend and I stayed up and talked about what a goofball he was. So some weeks later, he called me and he said, hello, this is Howie. And I said, Howie who? And he said, fine, thank you. Howie you. And then he continues to pursue her. And it goes on. And then she says, at one point he got some helium balloons and floated them up. I was on the second or third floor. They said, Gran, please come out. The girls thought that was wonderful, but I was embarrassed to death. I thought, this guy is really crazy. Finally, the lady who was in charge of the residence said, you've got to get that guy out of here. Give him a date, for God's sake. Get it over with. So I went out and I said, I'll give you a date someday. He said, no, you'll forget me. You've got to date me now. So he said, dinner. I said, oh, no, no, I'm not dating you for dinner. I said, how about lunch? He came on Saturday for lunch, and we went to the park, and he had a package of Lifesavers and some seltzer. He split the Lifesavers in half and drank half the seltzer, and then he handed me the can. But the next year, in June of 1970, we were married, and for 31 years, we were together. And then he died on September 11th. At the end of the interview, she says, people talk about closure. There's no closure when you lose a loved one. I don't care how you lost them. Your heart is always open. Edna St. Vincent Millay wrote something that affected me. It says, where you used to be, there's a hole in the world, which I find myself constantly walking around in the daytime and falling in at night. I miss you like hell. I miss him like hell.
Oh, the crazy stalker.
Yep.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And you, in fact, in you talk about in the book anyway, another 9/11 story of a woman, Beverly, who did a StoryCorps on her husband, who she lost in 9/11, and then she died herself in a car in an airplane crash.
In a plane crash, yeah. Beverly Eckert tells this incredible story about her husband Sean Rooney and the last half hour that they spent together on the phone when he was in the towers. And I mean, so again, with every one of these stories, there's something that you just can't forget. And there are a couple things in that. One is, the thing that really sticks with me is this phone call when he says, she asks him if it hurts. And he says that as the smoke is seeping in, and he says it doesn't. And she said, he loved me enough to lie. And then she talks about that night refusing to go to sleep the night of September 11th because she wanted to be able to say for as long as possible that this was a morning that she'd woken up with Sean, and she just refused to go to sleep. For her, that was a moment that she couldn't bear. And then this interview, you know, all these interviews go to the Library of Congress and become this record of someone's life, and it ended up becoming a record of Beverly's life as well, because couple years after the interview, she died on a Continental flight that was going to Buffalo that crashed. She was on her way to be with Sean's family and celebrate his birthday. So sadly, she passed away as well. But we are, we're privileged and honored that she had the chance to leave a record of Sean's life and of her life with StoryCorps.
Cheryl in Madison is with us. Hello, Cheryl. We're almost out of time. If you can tell us your love story quickly.
I will make it quick. I was a junior in high school, and after school, all of us girls, a bunch of us, would go to a sweet shop in my hometown, which was Darien, Wisconsin, and we'd sit in the back, play the jukebox, and drink cherry Cokes. Anyhow, I saw these three guys came in, and I thought he was so good looking. He had black, brown, curly hair, it hung down over his forehead, and I kind of made a fool of myself jumping up and putting money in the jukebox. He noticed us and his friends and cousins. He had gotten home from Korea, and he'd come to town to visit his cousins and uncle. And they said, oh, no, that's jailbait back there. You don't want to have anything to do with that. And he was 6 years older than me, and we would get to talking. I'd have to go up to the counter, of course, and pay for something. And we kind of like snuck around because I knew my mother would not approve of this.
Cheryl, I'm so sorry. We're almost out of time, so we need to have the happy ending.
It is a happy ending. I got married. We got married. I had just turned 19. We got married. We'll be married 57 years this November, and nobody thought it would last, that he was way too old for me.
Well, Cheryl, happy anniversary, 57 years. Love lasts for the most part, doesn't it, Dave? I say.
It does. It does. And thanks so much for having me on. I hope all of the profits from this book go to StoryCorps so we can deliver more service to more people across the country. So please get the book. But even more importantly, take the time tomorrow or any day to have these conversations with loved ones, or at the very least, tell people what they mean to you today.
Happy Valentine's Day, Dave. Thanks for being
with
us.
Thanks, you too. I'll talk to you soon, Joy.
Take care. Dave Isay, author of All There Is.